I'll second Stacy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay, I see that it's recording. Hi. Yeah. Hi, my name is Stacy, and I'm recovering from depression. And thank you guys for having me here today. I'm grateful to be here. And I called my talk today Accepting Responsibility, because that was the one thing I never wanted to do my whole life, or the one thing I thought I couldn't do. In fact, I called responsibility the R word, because I didn't even want to say responsibility. When it came to depression, I thought that I was helpless. I thought the only thing that I could do was go to a doctor or therapist and beg them to fix me. I was willing to be a guinea pig because I was so helpless. And I've had depression on and off for around 20 years, and I've tried so many different things. 20 years of different medications, and I feel like I've tried them all. Tried tons of different therapies, DBT, CBT, IOP, parts therapy, partial hospitalization programs, day programs, lots of different things there. I've had ECTs. I've had 6 series over 8 years. I've done a clinical trial for ketamine. My doctor wanted me to do a clinical trial for vagus nerve stimulation. That's where you get a pacemaker-like device implanted in your body, but luckily I said no to that. Basically, I was asking the questions, who and what would fix me? Because I felt broken, I felt defective, and I felt helpless. And today I have learned through Depressed Anonymous that I am responsible for my own recovery, that I actually do have a choice, and that for me, there is no magic pill like it talks about in our literature. You know, I was searching for that for so many years. So I would like to tell you guys my story. I've been in Depressed Anonymous for over a year and a half, and, today, I hope to speak from the heart and share my experience, strength, and hope with you guys. And one of the coolest things just from listening to the stories today that I've heard is similarities between people that surpass countries and boundaries. You know, I'm hearing the similarities of the experience of depression, of the feelings that we have, and from people all across the globe. And that is one of the coolest things I have found in this program, that I am not alone, you know, and finding not just similar pain, but a similar solution. So I will start at the beginning, which was my childhood. And I actually had when I was very small, I had a good childhood. I was an only child. I had a happy family growing up. But of course, as I started getting a little bit older, kids made fun of me, like a lot of us have had that experience, I'm sure. And I was afraid to speak up for myself. And I was told, basically, oh, just ignore them and they'll go away. Because you're such a great kid. Nobody could ever think bad of you. How could you ever think bad of yourself? That's impossible. You know, just ignore them. And I did ignore them, but the feelings never went away. The feelings ate up inside of me, and I felt not good enough. And that was the beginning of me starting to feel not good enough and starting to say what's wrong with me. And so I learned that what I was told, which I was told I'm fine, there's nothing wrong, and what I felt inside didn't match up. And so I learned not to trust myself. And that's been a big issue for me, you know. The other thing I want to mention is I had no higher power growing up. I was not raised on any kind of religion. So this was a big obstacle for me when I did come into recovery, because I was basically an atheist. I didn't believe in a higher power, and I had no concept of that. But I'll talk about that a little bit later. But I just think it's worth mentioning, you know, I didn't have any concept of something greater than myself out there. I thought humanity was it. That was it. And that's kind of a sad and lonely view of life. So, as I grew up, my parents got divorced, and it was actually an amicable divorce. But at around the same time, it was like adolescence, and things started changing. I started feeling rejected. I started feeling not good enough. I felt very alone. And some of that, I'm sure, had to do with a divorce. Others, parts of that had to do with just feeling rejected from my friends. Being an only child, I was alone a lot, but I felt, again, not good enough. And I was in a dance team in high school, a dance team and a color guard, and so much emphasis was placed on how we looked and looking perfect and being perfect. And so I learned that my worth was how I looked and being perfect. If I could be those things, I was worthy. Otherwise, I was not good enough. And that just went hand in hand with an eating disorder. So when I was around 16, I developed an eating disorder. I was bulimic. And along with that came intense feelings of shame, guilt, self-hatred, and self-loathing to the extreme. For me, it was a mental hell. It was so intense. That was really the beginning of my severe depression. And with that, there was so much secrecy and so much pretense. I had to pretend, or I had to make everything look good on the outside, but inside I was just, I felt like I was dying. And I tried to get the attention of my parents. I tried to let them know that things were not okay with what they perceived to be their precious, beautiful daughter. With, they just had no idea that anything was wrong with me, no matter what I told them. So I finally got their attention one day by my first so-called suicide attempt. I laid out in the snow while they were out on a date, or maybe they were just out, I don't know. And I waited for them to come home and find me laying out in the snow, supposedly waiting to die. And they finally realized that something was not right here. And so that was my first trip to the psychiatric ward at the hospital. That was in high school. And I still remember the psychiatrist there because the only thing I was really concerned about at the time was, I mean, I had no plans to be in a psychiatric hospital. I wanted to get out of there. Even though I knew I had issues, I did not want to be in this place. Like, I had a high school dance to go to, and that's what I was focusing on because, if I was at this dance, I was going to look okay, and then everything would be okay, right? This doctor laughed at me. He laughed at me and he said, "You have got a whole lot more issues going on than you think you do." Like, basically telling me I've got problems. And I did not like that. I felt extremely belittled and ridiculed. And my parents didn't appreciate that either. They just couldn't imagine that anything was wrong with their precious daughter. And so they got me out of the hospital. But that was the beginning of my journey into therapy and medications. And so I started taking antidepressants, and I started into therapy, and I just, I wasn't ready to address the things that were going on in my life. I wasn't ready for all that. So I continued to struggle, but I made it through high school, and I was, I was really good at what I did. I was a straight A student. I won all these awards on my dance team and color guard, but I still always had this feeling of never good enough. And I wanted to be perfect. And when I wasn't perfect, things fell apart. And I remember when I was a senior in high school, we had a state performance and I screwed up my routine. And for most people, I think it would have been like a, oh, well, oops, let's do better next time, or hey, it's okay. But for me, my reaction was, I want to kill myself because I hate myself so much because I screwed up. And that's, where my depression was. So I went away to college, and in college, I found drugs and alcohol. And that was a great way to avoid feeling all these negative feelings I had about myself. So I went from being a straight A student in high school to dropping out of my first semester of college because I was more interested in using substances than actually going to class. And I still had this eating disorder too. So for the next, it took me actually 12 years to get my bachelor's degree. And during this time, I had periods of really high functioning where I was in college and I was doing really well and I was going to classes and I had a job that I loved. I was coaching a color guard and a dance team, and that meant the world to me. Working with these high school kids, and I gave my heart and soul to it. I loved it so much. But at the same point in time, these feelings of depression would sneak up on me and they would hit me so hard. And then I would go through periods of being suicidal. And so during this 12-year stretch, I had I had two suicide attempts and I two more, at least two more trips to the psych wards. Intervention by, different doctors, trying different medications, trying different therapies. And actually, like during this time when I was doing well, I was even in a professional dance level group and I was a world champion. So there were times when things were going great, but there were times when I would wake up in the morning and I would say to myself, okay, do you want to go to class today or do you want to try to kill yourself? That was where my mentality was. And it's for me, when you're asking yourself those questions, it's so hard to actually get up and go to class and do the things you're supposed to do because, you just don't have the will to keep on living. So it was a difficult 12-year stretch. Finally, in 2005, I got sober. And because during this time, I'm taking medication, but of course, I'm not sober. So that didn't really help. So I got sober in AA. I found Alcoholics Anonymous. I was introduced to the 12 steps, and I do believe that helped save my life. And after sobriety, things were good for a period of time. I finally graduated college. I got my first job as a chemist. It was a great first job, but I never appreciated how good things were. I always had this mentality of, the grass is greener on the other side, or whatever I have is not good enough. Anti-gratitude. I was never grateful for what I had. And that's something that I have learned in this program and that I'm really working on today. And it's really easy to see now looking back, oh my gosh, things were so good, but I didn't appreciate it at the time. So even though things were going well, depression still creeps up, even though I'm on medications, right? Suicidal feelings still come back up. Around this time, though, I got pregnant and I moved back home close to my parents because I wanted my parents around for raising the child. And I was very, very depressed during my pregnancy. I was physically sick. I was, what do they call it, on bed rest. I had an IV pole that was connected to me that I had to carry around. Wheel around the apartment that I lived in. And I was very, very depressed during this time. And there wasn't much that I could do. I felt really isolated because I was plugged into my AA group in the one place where I lived. And then I moved. And so I lost a lot of those connections. And again, those feelings of isolation and being alone, it was very difficult to get through. But after I had my daughter, I felt so much better. I did get a new job and things were going well for a while. I loved being a mother. I still love being a mother. I think that's one of the best blessings I've ever had in my life. But even so, the depression's still there sometimes, and it's a struggle to get to work. It's a struggle to be responsible for myself. And I had this attitude of, well, if I'm not feeling good mental health wise, then I don't know how to get to work. And if I'm not feeling good, then can't somebody else do it? Because because I'm helpless, right? I'm at the whim of this depression. I'm powerless and I don't have any choices. That is how I felt. I ended up losing that job, but because the company shut down, not because of me. That's one that I didn't lose because of depression. And I went to graduate school. I actually got accepted into a PhD program, which was phenomenal. And again, another huge blessing. I didn't have to pay tuition. I got paid to be a research and teaching assistant. And it was an awesome 2 years of my life. It actually took 2.5 years, but the first 2 years were really awesome. And then my daughter's father and I started to have some really serious problems. There was some violence going on there. We split up and I soon became a single mom homeowner. And that was a whole lot of responsibility that I didn't know how to handle, especially considering I'm still depressed. So during this, towards the end of grad school, it was hard for me to keep going because, again, the depression keeps coming up and I'm having a hard time getting up and meeting those daily responsibilities. So I decided I was going to graduate with my master's degree and just look for a job. And that's what I did. And I actually found a full-time job. And because of the depression, I thought it was too much for me to handle. So I decided I was going to work part-time at a university. And I was teaching some college classes, teaching some chemistry labs for a while, which was really awesome. Looking back, I can say I loved it. But again, the depression starts creeping back in and it got really bad. And, you know, it's like I would be on medication for a while and it would work for a while. And then all of a sudden it stops working. And then when those lows hit, they went really low and the lows go to suicidal feelings. And I certainly didn't want to act out on that. And I didn't know what else to do, what else to try, because I feel like I had tried everything and I'm sober. I'm working the steps in AA, you know, and I'm still feeling this way. And there's one thing I haven't tried yet, and it's ECTs. And I don't want to go there because ECT is electroconvulsive therapy, otherwise known as shock treatment. And I'm a little scared of that, to put it lightly, you know. But I did a lot of research, and the research said that 80% of people who get this treatment experience success, whereas medication was much lower. And I talked to a doctor friend who told me it's safe and effective. And so I decided I was going to pursue this. And over the next 8 years, I had 6 series of ECTs, and each series is 6 to 8 treatments. So my first series was, I would say, successful because I felt a lot better. It was horrible to go through. It was very scary. And I did experience some memory loss, but I felt like it helped me. Unfortunately, after a while, those effects wore off. And so that's why I would go back again. And it seemed like the memory loss got worse each time. And then the very last ECT treatment I got, something bad happened. And I still don't know what happened because the doctor couldn't explain it. But I feel like I went into a zombie state and I lost the ability to speak properly. I couldn't write properly. It was hard for me to think. I would just go from moment to moment and I would be like, I don't know what I'm doing. I feel like a zombie. And severe memory loss and just severe loss of cognitive function. And that scared the hell out of me. And it scared the hell out of my mom. And, you know, I didn't know if I was going to recover from that. Eventually, after about a month, I did start going more back to normal where I was able to talk right and write properly. But it was really, really scary. And the bottom line is for me, you know, ECT is no longer an option. So after that, I ended up doing a clinical trial with ketamine, which didn't really help me either. And so now I feel like I'm at the lowest of low points in my life because my last resort doesn't work anymore when it comes to depression. I felt hopeless beyond hopelessness. I was still able to take care of my daughter, but I wasn't working. I hadn't been working for a long time. I was on disability. Getting out of bed was difficult. Thank God I could take care of my daughter, but that was it. And so I felt like after my daughter graduated high school, like after I was done raising her, I figured that I was just going to live in an institution for the rest of my life because that's how hopeless I felt. I felt like I was that much of a victim of depression and like nothing else was going to work for me. So that's where I was when I found Depressed Anonymous. I was literally in the same room I am right now, huddled in a heap on the floor in tears. I was on the phone with somebody from Depressed Anonymous and they were telling me that there is hope. And I'm just bawling, bawling because I'm in so much pain and I hear this tiny voice that tells me that, this person was really, really bad off too, that they felt like I did, but that they got through it. And so that's the beginning of my recovery in Depressed Anonymous. I always like to describe my depression as like a sine wave. It would be up and it would be down. And the ups would be what most people would consider normal, and lows would be near suicidal. But today, now that I'm in recovery, I don't even say my depression looks this way. I say my recovery looks like a squiggly upward line with a positive slope because my recovery isn't just a straight line. It has highs and lows, it has ups and downs, it has two steps forward, one step back. There are some days that are harder than others, but overall, it's been over a year and a half, things have been getting a lot better. And that's amazing. And so, like, what happened, right? So I came to Depressed Anonymous. I did what they told me. I got a sponsor. I got the books. I got the workbook. I started going to meetings. COVID happened. And then for our Journeys of Hope International meeting, we decided to go from 2 meetings a week to a meeting every day. And I started going to meetings every day and started reading the book. I started doing the workbook questions. I started praying again in the mornings, and thanking God at night. And I mentioned before, I wasn't raised on a God, so I had this loose concept of a higher power, and I originally used the group as my higher power, and that was always easy for me to identify because here was a group of people that were getting better from depression, whereas that was something I could never do on my own. And since then, I've been given the freedom to explore my higher power, which is so awesome. I love that about this program. And it's come to mean a lot more to me. Today I believe in a God that loves me, that cares about me, that is here if I seek a relationship with that higher power. So that's just something that's pretty awesome in my recovery, the growth of that higher power. But DA has taught me that I am responsible for my recovery. There are things I can do. It's this concept of being a SADDict. I thought that was crazy when I first came in the program. I'm like, what do you mean? I'm addicted to saddening myself? That's ridiculous. So there's a line from our book that says, it's an addiction if you continuously, or it's an addiction if you find yourself continually bashing yourself for past mistakes and failures. And that's from page 40 in the DA textbook in step two. And I was like, okay, that's true for me because I was continually bashing myself for all those times when I couldn't show up, when I felt so depressed, I do believe there were times when I was so far down in that black hole of depression that I could not get up and go do whatever I needed to do. I just couldn't. That's how bad it was at those times. But today, I do have a choice. So people in our meeting always say, I don't have a choice over my first thought, but I do have a choice over my second one. And I do have a choice about what I do with that first thought. And so I think of it this way. Like, if I'm addicted to an alcohol or to a drug, once I pick that up and ingest it in my system, then I'm powerless over it, right? So I kind of feel the same way about addictive, depressive thinking. If I pick up that thinking and start it going around and around in my head, I'm powerless over that, and it's going to take me down to this horrible negative place because that's what's true for me. That's what I've seen happen in my life. But today, even if I have that first thought, I don't have to follow that line of thinking. I can use the tools of this program. I can say no. I can, what is it? It tells us replace it with three positive thoughts. And that was so hard for me in the beginning. I was like, I can't think of any positive thoughts. So then I was told, when I'm feeling good, write down my positive thoughts. And I did that. And then when I was in those real negative places, I would go to that list and I would have to read those positive thoughts that I wrote down. That was one thing I did. Another thing is reach out to people. The people in this program have been hugely supportive and just made such a difference for me. I feel like I've developed really close friendships with people I've never met because you're in other countries and you're online, but you're a huge part of my support system. And today I can reach out to people and talk about my feelings and things I'm thinking and talk about it with people who are solution oriented, who know what's going on with the steps. And so I treat my depression a couple different ways. I treat it physically, I treat my physical body by taking medication. For me, I still need to do that. I exercise, I try to eat healthy, you know, I'm sober. That's something I've got to be for me because I'm an alcoholic. And I treat my mind and my spirit with the 12 steps and with fellowship and with service. And I just wanted to talk about how much service has helped me in this program, because when I came in here, I couldn't chair a meeting. I was still going to AA, but I couldn't even commit to a home group because I couldn't commit. I could not make a commitment. It depends on how I feel at this moment. If I feel like I can wake up and get out of bed, then maybe I can show up. But if I don't feel like I can get out of bed, then there's no way I can show up because I'm helpless. That is that old depressive thinking. That's where my mind was when I came in. And so people finally encouraged me to try chairing a meeting. And I told them that. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to show up because, you know, I'm not capable and I'm not responsible. And they said, that's okay. You can try. And if it doesn't work out, we'll back you up. And I was like, okay, I'll try. I was willing, right? Because we've got to be willing. And lo and behold, I showed up and I chaired a meeting. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did it. And then I did it again. And slowly but surely, I started building up some confidence that I could actually show up when I said I was going to show up. And after a while, then I started going to the business meetings and I became involved in the service of the group. And that has been huge for my self-esteem and my sense of being capable, because like I just had this huge sense of that I'm not capable of doing basic things because that's where I was at in my depression. But I have been baby steps. I love baby steps. I love the line, all growth is gradual, because that has been true for me. And so this series of baby steps, you know, that I've been doing has been working it really has been working. I used to hate that thought because I wanted recovery right now. I want it now, darn it, you know? But it doesn't work that way. But baby steps does work for me. And so I have great sponsorship, and I certainly didn't do it perfect. Absolutely not. But I kept trying. And I would go through the questions and share those questions with my sponsor, and I would get feedback and just continuing to go to meetings. And eventually I started sponsoring other people in the program. And that, I believe, helps me more than it helps anybody else. I'm very grateful for being able to sponsor others. And then we started a co-sponsorship women's group where a bunch of women are kind of going through the steps together in a co-sponsorship group, and that's pretty cool. And like all this service has just made me feel more and more capable. And another thing I want to share is, going back to the accepting responsibility thing. I've learned that I am responsible for my recovery. It's not my doctor. It's not my therapist. It's not my sponsor. It's not my sponsor's job to tell me to do the steps. I have to be the one who's going to do the work. It's not a pill. A pill is not going to fix me. I may need medication at this present time, but a pill is not going to fix me. I have to do the work. I have to do the steps. So I'm responsible for finding the tools and using them. And I had a sponsor tell me, keep searching until you find your help. And I love that because I was searching for Depressed Anonymous before I even knew it existed. I was talking to an AA sponsor of mine, like, I just feel like I need to work the steps for depression. And she wanted to help me try to do that, but this woman didn't experience depression. She was a trained counselor, but still, she didn't experience depression. So how could she do that? And my sponsor, keep searching until you find your help. Just keep searching. And I did. I found Depressed Anonymous one day online. And so the other thing I wanted to share was another line my sponsor always says, God has you right where he wants you. Because a lot of the time, I always felt like I should be doing something else. And my sponsor calls that shoulding on yourself, which I love. I felt like I should have this job, or, I am working part-time right now, but that's not good enough, right? I should have this other job over here. I should be at this point in my career. I should have a bigger house. I should, blah, 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 whatever. More of that sense of just not being good enough where I'm at right now. My sponsor's like, God has you right where he wants you. And I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever. Well, doesn't God know that I need a job, or doesn't God know that I need this? But if I step back and look at it, like I'm able to pay all my bills right now. I'm still on disability, which is a blessing for me, and I'm able to, I have medical insurance, I can pay for my basic necessities. And I'm here doing the work. And I guess that's where my higher power wants me. And I'm not even going to say I guess. I know that this is where I'm supposed to be right now. I'm here, I'm working with Depressed Anonymous, I'm working with people. People are helping me, and I'm here sharing my story at an international conference today. How cool is that? That's amazing. It is such a blessing. And I'm starting to feel like for the first time in my life that I'm actually right where I'm supposed to be, which is gives me God bumps, It's an amazing feeling that I feel like I'm actually okay in my own skin. And more than okay, I am acceptable. I'm good enough just the way I am. And that's really, really awesome. And I have the program to thank. I have you guys to thank for that. So I'm just really grateful that I could share my story with you today, and I hope that I can use my experience to help other people. And I just want to close with this. Thank you for being here because I need you. And that's all.
Thank you so much, Stacy. That was beautiful and very touching, and a power of example of how the program helps us to undepress ourselves. Thank you again so much. Would anybody like to ask Stacy a question?
Hi, Tish. This is Mara, recovering from depression. Stacy, thank you for your beautiful and inspiring story. It is such a message of help, a story of hope, I mean. And I thank you so much for being part of the DA group. And you are spreading joy and hope among members. And I am so grateful to know you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Sergey, I would like to ask you questions. Is it okay?
Yes, go ahead, Sergey.
Okay, thank you very much for your speech. Yes, really. Resonates and really gives hopes. My question is, how is your relationships with psychotherapy today? So, does it work together with 12 steps? Yes.
Yeah, so thank you for that question. Today I do go to therapy. Actually, I was going once a week, and now I go once every 2 weeks. But it works in conjunction with the 12 steps. So my therapist knows that I'm involved in the 12 steps with AA and DA, and she's very supportive of that. But therapy is just something that I would say aids to my recovery. It's separate from the 12 steps, but it helps me in other ways.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, it's Moore here. I'm an addict in recovery. I'm not sure if you can hear me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Moore.
Okay. Stacy, thank you so much. That was really moving to hear the depth to which you shared about what you've been through. And also to hear how your journey has, it was evident that as your journey has progressed, you changed from being somebody who'd been brought up to believe that the answers were with the medical profession, to find that actually they're not, somehow they're not for me with the medical profession. I have to do this myself. And I guess, my question is really around that transition from, I know from my own experience, how even contemplating that I was responsible and the label that was given to me wouldn't help me recover. I was wondering if there's anything that you can share around, the transition from, I guess it really is from being a victim to changing to having the courage to start to push past the people who are trying to help you and to look for your own way of helping yourself. If there's anything you can share with us about that.
Thanks, Moore. I think my perspective has changed. Before I saw medication and certain treatments as the one and only possible solution for me, the answer that was going to fix me, because I was incapable of helping myself in any way. And today I view those things as tools to supplement my recovery. So like I said, I do take medication, and I think for me that that's necessary, but that's a part of my recovery. It's not the only thing, and it's not fixing me. I don't want to say it's helping me to help myself. Hopefully that makes sense. So that's kind of how I view all the tools that I use. They can help me to help myself, but I can't rely on them to fix me because I have to take an active part in my recovery. Does that make sense?
Thank you, and thank you so much again, Stacey, for your heartfelt sharing. It was really, really powerful. Thank you.
Thanks, Moore.
Hi, Stacey. Hi, everybody. This is Lisa in St. Louis, recovering from depression. Hey, Stacey. First of all, thank you for your service and your share today. We don't always get to hear people's stories, and it's just, I don't know, it just gives a lot of hope, and I really, really appreciate you opening your heart and being vulnerable and sharing your path. One of the questions that I have for you, when you start to feel down or you're kind of in the struggle, okay, you know, to just combat that on a daily basis.
I kind of had a hard time hearing you there, but were you asking when I start to feel down, what do I do?
Can you hear me? Okay, I'm sorry, I'm in my car. It's like, what are your top three tools that you use when you're starting to feel down?
A big tool I forgot to mention is my gratitude list. I do a gratitude list every morning. And I call my sponsor later in the day and share that with her. And sometimes I twist it around a little bit. Sometimes I journal to God and or to my higher power and just share what's on my mind. And sometimes I look at it instead of a gratitude list as things that are going good in my life. Sometimes I will do an assets list. So it's like an intentional positive journaling to get me to look at things from a different perspective. Another big tool is just reaching out to people in the program and calling them, or if they're not available, I use WhatsApp a lot to contact people, and I'll just kind of tell them where I'm at and just getting that stuff out in the open is helping me a lot. When I go back and look at my workbook questions, that really helps. And then lately I've been starting to exercise more. So that is something that helps me. And if I'm feeling really down, you know, maybe I can't get to the gym, but if I can just get outside and walk around for 5 minutes, that's enough to start to retrain my brain or just to kind of change the negative thinking environment to explore positive thoughts. Hopefully that helps.
Hi, Stacey. This is Mara, recovering from depression. How do you picture your higher power?
That's a good question. So when I did the exercise in the workbook, when it said, like, paint your concept of a higher power, I didn't really know, and I don't really have a visual image of it. So what I did was I painted the sun and the ocean and the moon, because I think that those are things that are there always, that are always there, even if I can't see them. Like, I know the sun is there, even if the sun is down. Or same with the moon. And it's a power greater than myself. And I kind of think of the power of nature or the power underlying the scientific principles of the universe. Because, you know, being a chemistry background, I still like to think of it in that way. But there's There's some kind of creative intelligence that makes the molecules move in the way they do. What is it that makes the electron spin around a proton in an atom? You know, there's something there that makes energy and matter move the way it does and gives us that there's this, I don't know, creative force of nature, power for good in the world. These are kind of things that my brain tosses around. So if that makes any sense to you.
Yes, it does. Thank you, Stacy.
Uh-huh.
Sergey, question. Thank you again for this. Your share. Do you have some favorite instrument when you are inside a panic attack? How do you cope with panic attack?
Oh, I used to have panic attacks really bad. I didn't cope with them very well. You know, I just tried to control my breathing and settle things down. And I guess today the best thing that I do is practice the steps on a daily basis, and that helps me to avoid getting into those moments of panic. So I haven't experienced panic attacks in a couple years, and I just try to tell myself it's okay, I'm one with the universe, it's okay, you know, the serenity prayer, go through that. But since I've been in recovery, I haven't experienced panic attacks like I used to, or I'd say at all in the past year and a half.
Thank you a lot.
Yeah.
I'm Sheila. I'm recovering from depression.
Hi, Sheila.
What I wanted to say is that this isn't a question. I'm very appreciative of you sharing your experience, strength, and hope. I've heard you share at meeting level since I've been in this program, and it's a whole other animal for me to hear what it was like for you and what happened and what it's like now. So I was able to see a woman from the beginning of her experience and whatever to what you're sharing today. So I thank you very much for that.
You're welcome. Thanks for your comments.
Hi, Stacy. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, I'm Julian, DM member calling from Paris. I have a question about depression and friendships, because depression, I think, has I lost a lot of friends with my depression, and especially with commitments, you know. I'm invited to a party, and because I'm depressed, I'm just canceling it. And I wanted to know the fact that you are in recovery now from depression, has it changed? Do you have more friends, or are you able to meet your commitments on a regular level? That's my question.
Yeah, good question, Julian. So I also lost a lot of friends because of my depression. I went into big periods of isolation where I just basically shut people out of my life. And but today I am able to meet my commitments on a regular basis, and I am working on rebuilding those friendships and forming new friendships too. But, you know, that's another thing I have to be responsible for. So just the other day, Like, I feel lonely a lot when my daughter's gone, or that's usually when I feel lonely because I'm in the house by myself. So I'm learning I can do things. Like, I called up a woman and I asked her, hey, would you like to go out to breakfast after this meeting? And she said, yeah. I was like, okay, that's score one for me. Good for me, because I'm stepping out of my comfort zone and trying to form new contacts and new friendships. So I'm working on that, and it's a process for me, but I'm getting there. So thanks for your question.
Thank you, Stacy.
We have two more minutes if anybody else has a question. Okay, so if nobody else has any questions, we'll end this session. I just want to thank Stacy again. As you've all heard, you know, she's changed quite a bit since she's come to DA, and I've had the honor and the privilege of seeing her change so much that she is truly a miracle. So thank you, everybody, for coming. And the next speaker starts in 5 or 6 minutes. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Tish.
Don't forget to stop recording.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Tish, for your service.